In the words of the legendary Lou Gehrman, hello, dog fans, and welcome to the Sound the Siren podcast, because everything matters, including Oregon tears falling alongside the purple rain in Husky Stadium, and a game so loud your ears don't stop ringing until 2 days later. I am your host, Hooligan 7. I signed in tonight as Mallard Fussmore because they still crying. I am joined tonight, but I am normally known as Hooligan 7. I am joined tonight by Johnny Tug, DJ K Woody, UW Squints making his return to the pod, Darker Knight, aka Duck Duck Lose, and Hood Husky, otherwise known as Big Hood. Gents, how are we doing tonight?
Go Dogs.
Fabulous.
We all good on this side.
Yes, sir.
The world's just a fabulous place this week. That's all I've got to say. Well, without further ado, let's get into beverages. Tugs, I know you and I are on a similar train tonight. What do you got, buddy?
I got Goose Ridge Cab going down. I had some Italian tonight, and I just going to drink the whole bottle.
Nice. Temporarily might have lost the Darker Knight DJ. How about you? What do you got tonight?
Keeping it classy with some Coors Light tonight.
Nice. Squints, what you got, sir? Can't see it. You're
on mute.
Nice. All right.
There you go.
All right, Hood, I know that you got something. We saw it in the GC last night when we had to rain check it tonight. What are you drinking this evening, buddy?
Hey, what's funny, man, is I got home pretty early today, so I actually have already finished a whole bottle of red wine. And so yeah. Now I got the old reliable Space Dust here.
Nice.
Sipping
nice.
On that, you know. But after, the main course was a nice little cab, so.
Very nice. Darker Knight, how about you, bud?
Oh, you know, I'm just over here on the 16 fluid down.
Oh. We're having audio issues with Darker Knight. I have, as I texted the group earlier, real quick, I said, beat Oregon, drink Oregon, and I am drinking a 2017 DuPont Vineyard Pinot Noir from Panther Creek. It's quite nice.
All right, and moving right along into stupid tweets, who's got one that they need to call out?
One or like dozens?
Yeah. this may be the longest segment in Sound the Siren history, but Tugs, go ahead. You're at the top, top left of my screen, so go ahead.
What's that guy's name? Josh Pate or whatever his name is. He's got
he's rich now.
Yeah, Pate or who gives a shit. But anyway, that dude's got Oregon after the game at 5 and the Dogs at 7. Like, are you fucking kidding me? We just beat them.
But it's a power ranking, even though he clearly labels it a fucking poll.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the computer's model. We'll get a new model.
And then I got one
for it.
Ryan Schill. This doesn't really have to do with college football, but it's about not knowing the game of football, and Duck fans just clearly don't know shit. You only need 1 foot in bounds now in the NFL because Mike Thomas was nowhere near in bounds with both feet. A knee equals 2 feet, you dipshit.
All right, DJ, you got anything you need to call out here?
Oh man, do I? Okay, well, I was like, okay, which way do I go here? Do I go the hundreds of tweets that I bookmarked before the game, or the ones I did after the game? Well, I'm giving some of these Duck fans the benefit of the doubt before the game. They thought they were gonna win, whatever, but they're still talking shit after the game. Guaranteeing, seeing us in Vegas, guaranteeing the victory. Like, haven't they learned? Like, they don't get it. So anyways, this guy, Oregon Quackton, or definitely UO, it's in a thread with Jordan Ruffett saying, as the saying goes, you won a battle, but you will not win the war. It's going to be fun to beat UW by 3 scores in Vegas, and that we're going to go to the playoffs instead of the Purple Huskies. I can't wait to see the Husky fans after the rematch because UO will go to the playoffs. They don't learn. Like, I mean, it's fine to say the meet is there, but like guaranteeing a victory already, it's insane.
And I'm sure this is going to be kind of beating a dead horse, but remind me which team had a double digit lead and could have extended it if not for play calling. Was that Oregon or was that Washington on Saturday? I can't remember.
Yeah, obviously they can't remember either, because guaranteeing a win by 3 scores is wild.
Yeah.
I'll just add to that, the all the Ducks, yeah, who are talking about, hey, we're going to see them in Vegas, we're going to see them in the championship, yet they were talking about how UW fans were putting all their eggs in this basket.
It's our Super Bowl.
And now they're basically pinning their entire hopes on the rest of the season and going undefeated the rest of the way. So they get a chance at seeing us again. Check those eggs.
Yeah. The one that I've got is, like, I think at Ryan 1 Wheatley, who was talking about that Jen's going to be coming for Kalen in January. I don't know if you know anything about Kalen DeBoer, but the family that he has kind of matters to him, and his daughter is committed to the University of Washington for softball, a program that, by the way, USC doesn't have. And if any, even independent of that, if you have any concept of who Kalen DeBoer is, he is not going to be I'm going to be here 2 years and just go on to the next best bigger thing that's just flash and dash. That's just not who Kalen DeBoer is. In the slightest. So, yeah, to you, Ryan 1 Wheatley, you're a moron. That's all I got to say.
Is he a Duck fan?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Bro, okay. Ryan,
he's got the Dubs down as his profile picture on Twitter. And
now it makes sense.
Do I need to remind everybody that the reason that we can't really make reference to their hand signal is because it would be pornographic to do so, about what we can do with their little hand symbol.
Ryan's actually from Seattle. Believe he went to Seattle Prep when I, like, right out of high school, when I was responsible for, like, filming. I helped film for Seattle Prep's coaching staff. He was on the team. So it's crazy how you're from Seattle and you're a Duck fan, but it is what it is. I got kind of two.
Couldn't get into UW, clearly.
God, obviously.
There's that academic crowd showing up.
Once again, twice again. So mine is from, it's Buki again. His name is Buki Klein, which should tell you everything you need to know. It says, in quotes, "No one open, sacked Penix for the 7th time today." So he was expecting that to be the reality there. Ridiculous. No one was doing that all year. Been sacked 7 times in what, two?
A year season. And a half.
And I gotta, you know, since I made the appearance on the podcast earlier in the week, I gotta to Dominic with a Q. Appreciate the hospitality. But what I will say, man, is it took the most composure. I don't know if you can see my face, but it took the most composure to sit there as he was like, "Keys to the game. Oregon is going to get 5+ sacks. And I just was like, trying to keep my composure the whole time. But that
I'm surprised his key to the game wasn't to score more points than the Huskies, like, with his analysis.
Well, to keep your composure, I think we honestly might need to give the Academy Award for best lead performance by a leading actor to Hood Husky, because Jesus.
Go back and watch those, and this is what you see. Here's the demeanor. It was a nice little head nod.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, that's interesting.
Hood's got some good competition. Ferguson or Hood for that award right there.
No. I'd best like actor, not the Razzie for worst actor.
Yeah, true that.
Darker Knight or Tugs anymore? I got one more. Go for it, DJ.
Sorry, I said I was going to focus after the game, but I forgot about one that I really wanted to touch on. I think everyone saw the tweet. This guy named Travis Hawkins, T_Hawk86. He had this picture of Kyrie Jackson. I don't know if you guys can see with like his stats, and says the Odunze, me Kyrie. He will be clamping you up on Saturday. Hashtag go Ducks. Didn't happen.
Yeah, I think if anything, the only thing Kyrie caught on Saturday was the clap down in Eugene, but it wasn't the clamp on Rome.
Yeah,
him and I definitely caught cramps too.
I never seen a casual tweet like this get so many bookmarks. That's 60 bookmarks. Like, this is a guy with like 100 followers, not even 100. Like, that's insane.
I believe our Gen Z or that next generation of dogs will call that the ratio.
Yeah.
Oh, mercy. Yeah,
I was gonna add Justin, a good friend, Justin Carrillo. Talking about Taki's gonna feast because UW's O lineman is not good at all. He said homecoming. I don't think the only feast he's getting is what he steals from his DoorDash delivery that he's taking a couple fries.
Little Papa John's post game,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's about it.
ZTF's tweet was funny as hell, man.
Oh my god. He deleted it, but good. Do you have exactly what ZTF said?
On the top, go ahead.
I gotta find it, but
he said, maybe I'm gonna go DoorDash right now. I heard it makes you tougher.
Yep. Yep. The other one with an elite tweet this week was Jahel Jackson calling out that like his wide receiver coach now actually coaches him and teaches him something. Jahel Jackson, taker of catches, taker of souls on Twitter.
Do you think any of the guys still like Adam, Coach Adams, or Taki? I mean, maybe there might be a couple, but it seems like with these tweets and stuff that a lot of them don't.
No, it's not a like or a dislike thing. It's all in the scope of competition. Junior recruited him. Junior's a decent guy. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, I think there's a solid relationship there. You know, there's no bad blood. But at the end of the day, you go to the rival, so you're definitely going to hear it. I mean, me and Kellen, and, you know, with against friends often. And then we have a beer afterwards, and you damn sure going to hear it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's all love.
That could maybe just be lost some respect, too.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, on that note, I mean, not to go too far in the future, but who do we think is going to maintain the streak of which school has had a wide receiver drafted in the first round more recently? Washington? Oregon? Reminder, it has been since 1972. Since an Oregon Duck wide receiver went in the first round.
Whoa. None of their fans were born then, so they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Duck Scott's the only one that was born prior to that.
That Roma Dunze guy, pretty good. That might trigger Duck fans because who got the game-winning touchdown and just mossed both of his touchdown catches? All right. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on into the mailbag. We did have a number of questions come in, and we'll first go with one of Sub K's, who suggested or kind of asked us what we thought about potentially seeing a little bit more of Denzel Boston and Rasheed Williams against ASU and Stanford to rest Jalen, JP, and Jeremy for USC in a couple of weeks. What do you guys think? And we are also now joined by J-Cap, otherwise known as Michael Big Tenix Jr. J-Cap, how you doing tonight, bud?
Doing good. Sorry I'm so late, but here.
Better late than never. Actually, before we start on those mailbag questions, go ahead. Let's beverages of choice for the evening and any stupid tweets. We've talked about Justin Carrillo. We've talked about Ryan Schill. But quickly, any comments on those two areas?
Drinks of choice, vitamin R.
Oh boy.
But stupid tweets, I mean, it's all of them.
At Duck Twitter in general.
At Duck Twitter. Go Duck. Devious Duck, our guy Austin. Yeah, pretty much all of them. Ryan, that Scorigan guy. I don't know if any of you saw that. The I know ball I played. Shut your mouth guy. That one was good. I can't remember the exact wording, but that was golden. But yeah.
All right, mailbag. So what do we think about Denzel Boston or Rashid getting a little bit more run this weekend and potentially next to rest Jalen, JP, and Jeremy for USC?
No.
Agreed.
Well, I mean, yes, like if it's a blowout, like I don't want those guys resting that they're capable of playing. I mean, obviously, J-Mac might be one that, like, okay, yeah, but those other guys, I'm hopeful Polk and stuff should be out there playing Jeremy if they're capable of playing. But yeah, give me Boston second half, then yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with them playing, but I don't want them playing in place of the guys that are top of the depth chart guys. And I mean, if you get guys that are lower on the depth chart, younger guys, I don't mind them playing in a blowout situation, but just to play them to protect J-Mac, JP, Jeremy, I don't like that at all.
Yeah, I think just follow the game flow that's happened in every other game that's not been Oregon. You know what I mean? So get up. You know, obviously have your starters get up. You know, 3.5 quarters, 2.5 quarters, and then have your people have that second, third string get in there. A couple Arizona boys on your roster, have them get in there just to play in front of family, that type of thing. So, yeah, but we did this last year. You know, we assumed this was going to be a walkover, and this was one of the four games for a lot of our freshmen because we assumed that we were going to be able to do that, and it did not work out well. We had bums, Brian Thompson, out there having a career day at wide receiver versus us. So, yeah, no, I'm not with that.
Yep. Agreed. Handle business. Whatever it takes. Handle business. Kick some ass. Everything else down the road doesn't matter if we don't do what we need to do on Saturday night.
And we're also playing against our a CFP seed. You know, USC beat Arizona State, I believe, 42-28 or something. Correct. Like that.
Yep.
So we got to make it known that is not, they're not in our league either. So
I think that was clear by the fact that they lost by 4 touchdowns last weekend, but that's just me.
I'll add that Giles did a really good job of standing in for J-Mac. You know, he's not J-Mac, but
shit, for
a guy who hadn't played all year, first touches in a game, coming out of nowhere, like I didn't even know he was going to be suiting up. He did good. There was actually some, Penix had any misses, it was a play or two where Giles just beat his guy, just completely beat him. He forced the ball to roam a couple times, but which you can't really fault him either. But great performance out of Giles. So would not at all be opposed to, you know, having him step in and just keep running with it while J-Mac's out.
Yep, agreed.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. I just tossed that in at the end of the last pod. I was like, oh, shit, he posted an Instagram story. Maybe he's going to play. And then all of a sudden, there he goes.
I mean, everything was conversion downs, like third down, third and four, fourth and six. And then I think it was first drive of the game, he had the block to get the edge for Jay Polk. I mean, yeah, oh, yeah. Routed up Jaleel Florence.
Yeah, he had some big plays. Obviously, the touchdown, but those third, fourth down conversions were huge. They weren't easy balls to catch, too. I mean, they're great throws like Penix, but like they're tough throws, tough catches, and he made them.
Yeah, that one at the end of the first half where Penix was getting some pressure on first down in their territory, and it was in traffic, and Giles was able to make a kind of tough catch over the middle that, mm-hmm. I mean, there were some folks that were kind of poo-pooing Giles a little bit in one of the group chats, and it was like,
Lord,
dude, he made some tough plays in that game. It doesn't show up in the box score. He had a few catches for like 2, 3, 4 yards at a time, but those were tough catches and important plays in that game. Yep. That, I mean, box score watching is one thing. I mean, come on now.
Yeah, out of all games to critique Giles Jackson, you chose.
Yeah, right.
That was
right.
Against an SEC defense.
Yeah.
Right.
Bro, that 4th and 6, like, first of all, they masked the slant very well. Like, Giles was off the ball, but like the switch release, stutter, mm-hmm. stutter, it slant. Whoo, that shit was sexy.
I mean, he might have been like the key player to the game for us. If you think about it, like, with like the injuries that happened and the way he played.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. With what they kept talking about with how much they were putting J-Mac in the game plan, and then to lose him all of a sudden like that and have the mm-hmm. offense not take too much of a step back because of the way that he stepped up and showed out in his first game back that no one really expected him to play. I mean, yeah, I would say for sure he's at least one of the top 2 or 3 players in that game as far as standout breakout players.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, there's an argument to be made for Rome, certainly. But like it in terms of offensive grades from the eyeball test, and I haven't gone back and watched the entire game on the recording yet because I'm so luxuriating in the experience of it from Saturday. But honestly, like, there's more questions to be called about like Mike's game than what Giles brought to the table by or the interior O line versus Giles. Like, Giles balled the fuck out. I will say, kind of related to a mailbag question, this was a great one from J3_dogfan. Last week, the game from last week on the all-time scale, kind of where do we rank it? And I'll jump in and start on this one. I have a hard time saying that there was a bigger game in the history of Washington football at Husky Stadium than this one. Like, we can go back to all we saw was purple. And that was an elite level USC kind of coming in, or at least a very high level USC, but 2 top 10 teams, the added vitriol given the importance of the Oregon rivalry. I'm not saying this, you know, before I go any further, Duck fans saying that this is our Super Bowl, shut the fuck up. Every Washington fan that knows a damn thing will take a conference championship with a loss to Oregon over a win over Oregon, but no conference championship. But the circumstances, the fact that there was the first top 10 matchup between the two programs ever, I don't know that there's a bigger game in Washington history. Maybe Nebraska in 92, but that's about it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think you're right. Some of those older games, early 90s and stuff, I was too young to watch or know better. But, yeah, there's everything you said about the Oregon rivalry, but just, like, this season, how important that game was. You know, we're trying to get a national championship, and this is one of the legit shots that we have. And, you know, as given the circumstances of the other teams in the country, we have, like, 6 or 7 other undefeateds. Like, there's never hardly any margin for error, but especially this year, one loss might take you out. And so, yeah, this all around is just a great game. And then obviously just being against Oregon makes it even sweeter. But again, yeah, like I said, not the Super Bowl.
I mean, I also think that and I'm going to jump back in real quick. I also think it's completely disingenuous because you actually have to acknowledge where both programs are at the current time. For a program to play for the conference championship, you've got to get through this game with a victory. Or, I mean, like, yes, is there a path where if Washington lost this game that we could get to the conference championship? Yes. Is there a path for Oregon to get to the conference championship? Absolutely. But is it a lot easier being in the driver's seat as Washington is right now because we beat Oregon? Yes.
Yeah, and I'll add one more thing. This conference championship this year is a little bit different than years past too, with it being the last year of the Pac-12 championship. So that adds even more to it.
But yeah, any other thoughts on kind of where this one stacks up in the history of UW games that you guys have experienced, have been in attendance for? Like I said, for me, it's the best football game I think I've ever been to. That includes the triple overtime Apple Cup in 2002. But this one actually kicks the shit out of that one. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this was the best. Yeah, this was the best sporting event in general that I have ever been to, regardless of football or anything else, man. This was the best sporting event I've ever been to. The Big House was like a spectacle just because it's so regal and stuff like that, but you know, the stakes weren't there and all that kind of stuff. It wasn't a rivalry. But yeah, this was by far the best like sporting event in general.
I think the fact that it's against our main rival and just the history with them, that it, yeah, it's probably the biggest game. I mean, the only one I could think of is 94 Miami UW Husky Stadium. That's another one.
And I'll add it to what I was saying. Sorry, talking again, but just like the crowd and energy, and then just the whole college football world, or in the United States, I guess, was watching that game. It was the most watched game that day. College game day was there. Like, people were talking about it all week. Like, it was just so hyped up game. And, you know, just coming out on top is just makes it even sweeter because, yeah, watching that game on TV, I wasn't there, but like, you can tell that crowd was just, I can't remember seeing something like that at Husky Stadium on TV watching it. It was just a crazy atmosphere, I can tell. And I'm jealous for all y'all that were attending the game.
It was different. It was very different.
Yep. Chugs, one second. I was going to say that I definitely had the privilege of hanging out with Darker Knight and Hood before the game. And I said it in our Thomas Iron had the Adults GC earlier this week, that the only other thing that I've experienced that compares to this, and particularly the reaction to the end of the game, was the double in 95. And just that, like, that moment of breath, and then just the explosion of joy, and just I don't have words for it. But that's the only thing that's come close to me. And like, I think watching from home, I had a similar reaction to the 2013 NFC Championship game when Richard Sherman batted that pass. I wasn't in the stadium for that. And I don't know if anybody here was in the stadium for that, but that's the only thing that comes close. And yeah, just an incredible atmosphere and an incredible moment in Husky history. Go ahead, Squints. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I love the pageantry of having game day there. Like, mm-hmm. I had a whole lot to it. I was kind of surprised, like, thinking, you know, it's nice, but I think they talked up the program really well. Just overall really well done. And then it was only 3 hours before that ended, and right in the game. I think that helped.
Agreed. Yeah, Tugs.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead. Yeah,
Pat got that crowd like jacked up. He was loving us, man. He was loving it out here. So what was it? The fourth? I mean, it was unofficial, but what did the decimals end at? Like 131.
Yeah.
That was the fourth loudest game in college football history. Then at that level,
yeah, fourth or fifth or something. Yeah.
Yeah, something close. I would love, almost like an analysis of what it like. Because as much as I think I saw a couple of times early in the game where it said that it was above 130, but even like in the experience of it, nothing was as loud as like the third and fourth and out stops prior to our drive to take the lead. Like, new levels of loud, and like, I was feeling like, and I was, as much as you could have in it, like an advantage point to experience it. I was about 6 rows up from the Oregon sideline early in that game. I was hearing that like wave effect where like I almost was not hearing out of my left ear. It was that wah, 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 wah. And I guarantee you, even in the experience of it, that it in that third and fourth down stop, and then like after Rome's touchdown, and that immediate instant after the kick went wide.
Good night. Kick, bro, that shit.
It is the first quarter, and it is loud, and Husky Stadium is shaking. Oh, and by the way, on that point, during a remodel of this building, the facilities were retrofitted to mitigate the amount that the stadium would shake versus what it was before. So just putting that out there. Go ahead, Tugs.
With the crowd noise and stuff, for you guys that were at the game, did you guys go back and watch it? But did you notice, I said this in the GC, and Al's the only one that said yes, he was. Did you notice that their center was false starting like almost every time?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I was saying that too.
I was staring right down the line for the vast majority of it, and they were jumping early by about a half a second every goddamn time.
Well, is it a false start though if the center moves first like that, or he just moves before everyone else did? So it was just awkward.
It's an illegal snap.
Oh, okay, that's what I was wondering too.
But what I was saying, like, I hopped in a Husky space and an Oregon space, and I kind of just was mentioning how they were just letting things go. Like they were like, "All right, ZTF, you're offsides. Fuck it, he's false starting. So I'm just gonna let y'all figure it out."
Yep. I mean,
they're just gonna let it go because everybody would like ball out. Y'all got it.
Yeah, and we talked about it in the pre-show, and like that's much my preference. It's just like let the players play versus like calling every damn ticky-tack thing. And like that's the one thing I will say: shouts to the officials for just letting it go and letting the teams decide it.
And it was consistent, like throughout the entire game. It wasn't like they started calling it random. They only called it when it was like real egregious false start or real egregious offsides, as opposed to starting to like randomly throw them just for the sake of it.
What I will say, and I'm pretty sure we got to cut the segment, but what I will say is I understand that this was the first big game in a long time, but I don't know how the fans didn't pick up on the fact that when the play was over, we would stop roaring, and then they would rush back to the line and communicate before we started roaring again. So, like, stay roaring. Like, don't stop and wait until the – because the crowd wasn't able to really impact the snap counts or anything like that, impact the offensive line with false starts and stuff, because they were able to, in those 5 to 10 seconds, communicate, and then we started roaring once they already were set. So just kind of keep it consistent during big games. Keep it consistent.
That's a great point. In my case, I will say that was a matter of sustaining my voice so that I had something left if the game was close at the end. Because
shout out to Steinfeld. That was a great game plan. Like they must have practiced that for us.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Credit to them. And yeah, we'll stop it here.
Can support this podcast at podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/soundthesirenpod.uw/support. Thanks. Go Dogs.
All right, we're back. Squints, I think you had a thought there regarding band placement and timing. Yeah,
I do love the pettiness. I know it goes both ways, but the pettiness of sticking the band all the way up in the top corner in the 300 level.
Yeah, which and Leah made a great point on the Fourth and Inches podcast this week that actually that actually works somewhat against us because it just means that the sound of that band bounces back down. But I will absolutely trust Leah that they were playing all the way up into the snap and so actually violating an NCAA rule. So let's keep an eye on that next year or the next time that Oregon comes to Husky Stadium. Go ahead.
Oregon broke a rule? I'm shocked.
faking injuries like Sally faked orgasms and when Harry met Sally. Shouts to Puddles the Duck.
Oh, shit. I can't Tugs, find
go
it.
Ahead.
I can't find it.
Also, like, do duck fans need to start going through metal detectors because for their whistles that they're bringing into the stadium? Is that?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Because on that third down in the second half, it was snapped and, like, the whole offense stopped. I think it was third.
Literally stopped.
The whole offense stopped and was like, what? And then they that was like really weird that how that happened. It looked like the offense heard whistles. Like, and they just stopped. So that's pretty,
well,
dude, that's pretty fucked up.
No, absolutely. It's doing any literally absolutely everything out, even inside or outside the rules to win. That's fucking bullshit. But I mean, I will also say, and shouts to Acropolis Jr. for pointing this out. This is not a criticism of Duck fans or the Duck team. This is a criticism of the officials. There was a really quick whistle at about 11, I think 58 in the game. Jalen Polk converts a first down on a short pass. He's never actually down, but as he's on, literally like just still on the Oregon defender, the ref blows the whistle and JP stops. Whereas Jalen's actually never down. He could have taken that and taken it to the house.
Hey, the darker night. Hey, you see how mad I was, bro. I was like, God, these young kids getting up and celebrating. God damn it. Run
I went back and looked at so it, but like, mad, it bro. Literally was immediate. Like, he, like, the, like, Jalen is still in motion in, like, the whirl of that tackle when the referee blows the whistle. So I don't blame JPL on that one at all. Particularly given the play he made. Kind of crucially, 10 minutes later.
Oh, bullshit. The Phil Knight wire hit the account.
It already was started, yeah.
The Phil Knight wire hit the account.
Yeah.
And then they were like, all right, bet. We gotta get him down here somewhere.
It was after it started.
He's right. Yep. So he's running down, and he's also on the field, which is an additional foul.
That almost changed the game because that was a third down stop, and they were gonna punt, and then they got the first
right. After. But I mean, he was also on the field. Which was another flag on the bench, which would have been an additional. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and move on to the next mailbag question. Quince, thanks for joining. We'll see you soon. Another one from Sub K. Level of looking back at last year as it pertains to the matchup this year, level of pissed about the ASU loss last year, and do you think this staff has used it as bulletin board material for prep to make sure we take care of things against Arizona State this year? I absolutely think yes, the staff is reminding this team of it. And without getting two sections ahead of things, I think that's going to affect what we're going to see on Saturday night in a big way. Yes. Go ahead, Jacob.
Okay. With all due respect, I love everything that you said, and I agree with it, but my take is going to be that Kalen's just a troll and beat Oregon and then release new uniforms immediately. So that's what I'm going to go with.
And I got to jump in real quick, and maybe the fact that Oregon's wearing throwback uniforms this week is that they're throwing it back to a time where both Oregon and Washington State were just dog shit programs in general. So
throwing it back to what? You gotta have tradition to throw back to. They don't got none of that shit.
So true.
Bust.
Ahmad Rashad.
Bust.
I will say, though, objectively, those are Oregon's best uniforms.
Absolutely.
The ones they're going to throw this weekend.
They should be their
everyday uniform.
They're soft.
Better than anything else they put out for a long time.
But on the subject of uniforms, let's talk about it for a second. How nice
Love
are them. The uniforms we're busting out this weekend. That chrome with the gold helmet.
Dude. The chrome is good.
You guys have seen the helmet that's in my background. It's not in the screenshot now, but it was a prototype from back in the 90s where it actually is the gold instead of that mustard yellow W. How nice does that gold W look on a purple helmet? I will say on the note of purple and purple rain and Husky Stadium, I apologize to everyone that listened to my off-key ass. My Twitter post and Instagram on Saturday. I had no voice left. You'll have to forgive me. All right, let's go on and move on to Sub-K's last question, which was how much hate for Train is the fact that Kenny Dillingham listed Train as his favorite band, a guaranteed W, and I think so. I don't necessarily agree that Train is worse than Nickelback or Creed, but they're not great either, so.
I'd like to take it back to my preseason prediction pod when we asked about this game on the schedule, and I said that this is an automatic W just because Kenny Dillingham listed Train as his favorite band. So shout out to Sub-K for calling that back. Appreciate it.
Yep.
I had a
you really had to cut me off mid sentence with that shit, dude. Is Kenny Dillingham got a brother?
Hey, come on, Dilly Dilly.
And the fact is, he's young. Like, so he was like Dilly was like 11 when Train was popular. So that says something.
I don't know if you saw, I tagged the Sound the Siren account in a question that somebody had, and it wasn't posed in a question, it was more of a statement, but it was basically, quote unquote, how is our run defense improved if it's ranked 87 and we gave up X amount of yards to Oregon? I personally would start in saying that, let me find the person's at, but I'll personally start in saying that if you give up a bunch of yards in between the 20s and you're not giving up points, what does it matter?
Yep.
You know, it's about the scoreboard. It's not about how many yards that somebody is gaining. If you just looked at the box score and saw Bo Nix's stat line, you would have assumed that team won.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
The Buckies,
you know what I mean? So at the end of the day, man.
But we've yet to give up an explosive run, you know, a run over 20 yards all year. And that's the essence of contain and not bend or break. Doug, go ahead.
Exactly. That's just the point. Exactly.
Well, we gave up 300 yards to them last year. This year, they only got 204.
Exact, and it's a recipe that we've been using. It's a recipe we've been using all year. Is like, you know, you may be able to, you know, get your four, get your six, but you're not going to be able to beat us with the run game anymore. You know, like it's too slow developing. You're going to need to stretch us. You're going to need to, you know, take your explosives. And the person's at is a Husky in Texas, by the way.
Yep.
So Husky in Texas. Appreciate the question.
And let's be honest, are we going to see a back the caliber of Bucky Irving the rest of the year? Yeah. I don't think we will.
And I mean,
and that's no disrespect to Cam Scadabo, who is a very good back, and we need to be disciplined and tackle. But Bo Nix is a better quarterback than Trenton Bergé.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon has better receivers than ASU. Not to get into our preview, but. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just think about, and I was trying to make this point, you know, leading up to the game, just think about the running back rooms that we have faced, you know, and we've taken out their running game, taken away their running games when they have weeks prior and weeks after have dominated. You look at somebody like Ashton Jeanty, who is one of the best running backs in the country after he's played us. All
future Husky, unless he goes to the draft.
Come on.
Yeah, he's nice.
Nice. You know, Nathan Carter, elite quickness. It's Carter and Berger there. You got Ginty and Helani. Helani didn't play, but what Ginty did. Jaden Ott and Isaiah Infants. We see what they're doing. Jonah Carter has almost 700 yards rushing this year, I believe. So, like, Jonah Carter and DJ Williams are battering rams that we saw dominate Wazoo.
On so, that, yeah. How you doing, Kooks?
Lord have mercy. They don't even know.
Thanks.
Yeah.
No, go Cougs. We're all Cougs this weekend. Come on now.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, go Cougs this weekend.
God, that wouldn't be so fucking funny.
They have the chance to do the funniest thing of all time. Funniest thing of all time. If they win this weekend, oh my God, bro. I'm going to be so insufferable, and we didn't even have anything to do with that game.
The ultimate, ultimate, ultimate Pac-12.
They're going to blow exactly that. But yes, like,
I want Wazoo to win so bad just to watch JCap just talk shit on Twitter.
Oh, I'm going to be so horrible. 12:30.
Wow. JCap, if that happens, you need to charge admission to your Twitter account.
Oh, it's over, bro. If Wazoo pulls that out somehow, oh, God. Could you imagine Dan Lanning going 1-4?
I'm getting suspended.
Facts.
All right. Moving on to the next mailbag question that came in from at CoreyYT27. Corey, how much was Jeremiah Martin underappreciated last year, and is he the main difference between our defense this year and last year? I definitely think Jeremiah was underappreciated. That said, I think the defense is still a little bit better this year than it was last year, even if the pass rush numbers are not the same as they were a season ago.
I'd love to have him, though, for this season. That'd be
1,000%.
That'd be a game changer, but
particularly after
it. Help on the edges would not be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Particularly after the NCAA continues to have its head stuck completely up its own ass. But, yeah.
I mean, we see how much a healthy, you know, Uluma Ale is impacting these game plans on the defensive line. And I couldn't imagine having, you know, obviously another head there in Jeremiah Martin. We're getting our pressures and things like that, but we're not having too much luck. So I think that's the difference between Martin. Martin was allowing a lot more production from others to happen. So from a production standpoint, we've fallen off, but pressure wise, we're still kind of like leading in like a lot of like havoc rates and all that kind of stuff and pressures and all that stuff, but we're not getting there.
Thanks again, Texas A&M, for not redshirting him.
Joe Moore. I was about to bring him up too.
That could have. That's tough. He was an athletic and lengthy kid. I don't know if he would be playing though. I think a lot of the edge targets that we had, wouldn't be playing. I don't think a lot of them were necessarily way better than somebody like Holzclaw. So, it may allow a lot more depth, you know, and we can have a bigger rotation out there. And I think having Voy on the edge has actually been beneficial in the run game, to be honest with you, and has caused a lot more havoc on the edges in the run game. So,
what about Savelle? Do you think he'll be playing some this year?
Don't make me laugh, bro.
A serious question. He was playing last year. I mean, not a lot, but
I think at the end of the day,
has he played for Colorado? Oh.
Yeah, that's crazy because their defense is bad and he's not playing.
I think it has a lot.
It's rough.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
At the end of the day, man, that's a really smart kid. That kid makes a lot of calculated decisions, him and his family. That's a kid that is extremely focused on his academics as well. You know what I mean? So it's no different than like what TB did or some other guys have done. You know, sometimes you're going for that degree. Sometimes you're getting that degree, man. But he's definitely better than some of the guys that they're playing for sure. And it can be them.
I hope so.
He is. And it can be some foresight for sure, because they're playing a lot of like redshirt juniors and seniors and grad players on defense. So I don't know how the redshirt rules work and stuff, but he hasn't touched the field for four games. So he can easily be just kind of waiting it out for next year, because what's he's a sophomore technically? Because I think COVID and stuff, he's a sophomore, I believe. Mm-hmm. So he's got an extra year. So they're going to definitely need him next year. He's an okay run stopper, just off the strength of his side.
Yeah.
So they're going to need him next year. Gray? Shit. T? Give one of them.
Yeah.
Get one of them shirts. Give one of them pride shirts.
He's listed as a junior on Colorado's roster.
Okay. So, damn.
Yeah, that makes sense, because he never redshirted.
No.
No, he didn't.
But how's that four-game work? Can you do, like, under four games as a junior and still maintain your...
Yes, yeah. I think only... Yeah, you could.
And he ain't played.
I thought that was mostly, like, for medical redshirts, but, I mean, I might be wrong.
No.
No. That sounds right, though, that he's a junior, that if he was playing this year, he'd be a junior. But if he redshirts, he'll still be a junior next year. Still 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, like, we're talking about it now with Giles, like, managing Giles to maintain the redshirt. And I mean, and honestly, it would be an interesting conversation at the point that with how much Jalen has missed. Well, we're now at, like, four games because he took eight snaps in the Oregon game. But not... We see who. It's not a video format podcast, but
hey, if he comes back, boy, I tell you.
No, I mean, I don't think it's about preserving eligibility, because he's got another year left. I think if he's not putting it on tape, then he might come back.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
yeah, they're not going to redshirt him because you can't redshirt him.
There's no.
He's not going to stay two more years.
Exactly.
One more year.
Exactly. It's not an eligibility problem. It's a whether or not he feels he put enough on tape, or his people think he put enough on tape to get drafted as high as he wants to get drafted. Yep.
That's what Cam Williams did last year. Just reserved those 2 years.
How's he doing at Georgia Southern, by the way?
I think 2 weeks ago he got his pick. Yeah, he's doing okay. I think he might have actually been hurt early. I think he was hurt a little early, and now he's finally getting some ticks up.
All right. And our last mailbag question came in from at UW Moose. And why Tybo on the goal line on fourth down? I would say why a lot of the play calls in that sequence? Why not just hammer Dylan Johnson, who had been very effective? Why not call at least one pass? Yes, I know Mike was cramping, but there's that. Just a lot of things that went wrong on that particular down and distance. Guards pulling, I think, the wrong direction. Tybo didn't read it correctly. Mike didn't read it correctly. Just a lot of stuff that could be better if we had it to do over again.
Yeah, I won't say why Tybo. I will say in Grubb's post-game interview, I think that encompasses everything we need to know about why Tybo. Grubb was able to admit, you know, that he made some mistakes in the game, and then that also personnel decisions, I would say untimely personnel decisions, coupled with play calling is why Tybo. I think he even mentioned that usually that package is for Jeremy, but Jeremy had an ankle issue. So that was probably on the position coach being like, all right, Tybo, get out there. And Ryan probably didn't know that Jeremy wasn't going to be the one out there. So, so it's not really a why Tybo. I think it was a good play call, but, when you're got, it's a good play call if everybody's healthy, if Mike was healthy. But that just was not a,
Yeah, I mean, I honestly had bigger issues with the play calling on the preceding drives where we went three and out.
Uh-huh.
And weren't sledgehammering with Dylan until Oregon could prove they could stop it.
Ryan was going for that kill shot those two drives. Went deep three times in two drives?
Yep, but you can get that kill shot if you run Dylan a couple of times, and then like, oh, Dylan picks up 6-7 yards on first down. We pick up a couple first downs, and we're out at the 20, 25, 30,
and then you run a play action over the top. Mm-hmm. But I mean, and like, and there were receivers open that Mike missed. It was just the, I would say the last thought about Oregon relative to the mailbag, relative to our recap of Oregon, is we left so much meat on the bone that all of the, as much as I will say that this was a game between the best two teams in the conference, there was so much meat left on the bone that you play this game again and Washington brings its absolute A game.
And J-Mac actually plays.
You could see an entirely different result where Washington just like, okay, Ducks, that's cute. You do what you do. Bucky runs for what he does. And we still win by a double digit score anyway. So let's run it back in Vegas and see what happens. I
mean, that too. And also, like, one of the things that we saw in this game that we haven't seen a lot in games prior this season is a lot of pressure on Mike. And Julius Boileau, who is our primary pass blocking right guard, wasn't able to go in this game. So, I mean, obviously, Guerin is a little bit better in terms of the run game.
Yep.
But if we're watching the strength of this offense in the passing game, having Julius in there to keep Mike a little bit more clean. I mean, we saw plenty of passes that were not quite as accurate as we're used to seeing Mike over the last year and a half. So, I mean, if we have Julius in there, Mike stays clean for even half a second longer. I mean, there were a couple throws like to JP at the end of the first half in between three defenders that was just 6 inches off. Could have been another explosive play. So, I mean, to your point, we did leave a ton of meat on the bone for a multitude of different reasons. And if we play this game again in December in Vegas, I mean, I'm still very confident that we'll come out with a win again.
And to be fair, Oregon obviously left some meat on the bone as well. But
absolutely. But Dan Lanning decided to have a stroke three different times in the game and decided to not make the right play calls.
I had a couple of different conversations about that. Like, I actually think his decisions to go were correct. It was the play calls in those situations where, like, if he'd run Bucky on, even on that fourth and a long three, we could be talking about there would be a very different tenor to this podcast tonight.
I disagree that his decisions to go were all, I think the end of the first half, the decision to go and not kick the three is absolutely the wrong decision. Yep. We can argue on both sides on one. Yeah. I think that it's definitely the most arguable one as far as where they were at in the flow of the game, coming off a turnover to not take the 3 points right there and give Washington the halftime lead of 4 points instead of taking the three when you had it. I think was the most arguable, but I think the other two later in the game, especially the last one, I can empathize with wanting to be aggressive there and seal the game. I don't have a problem necessarily with that one, but the play call in that situation was horrible.
Yep.
So one thing, a couple of things. To be honest, they are their tendencies. You know, that is Lanning's tendency. And it's also in the third quarter when Grubb has the ball kind of at the 30 or lesser, that's his tendency, is to take at least one of those bombs, one or two of those bombs, a 70, 75-yard touchdown. You know, we saw it last year in this game. You know what I mean? That's those are their tendencies. And then one thing I kind of have been mentioning to family and friends who want to talk about the game is this was a game where it just seemed like the players were balling out and the coaching staff seemed like they just wanted to insert themselves into the game flow. You know, like there was so much positives on both sides and the coaching staffs were like, nope, F it. I'm going to do this my way, you know? And it was like they inserted themselves into really good games, which increased the drama. But it was just like, you guys, if you just let the game kind of go based on how you guys were having success, both sides would have been fine. But it was like they tried to interject themselves into the narrative and it just really bit both sides in the ass a little bit.
Agreed. Agreed. Well, I think we've gone on at length about this epic matchup, and I do think it's one of the best games at Husky Stadium in basically ever. But let's do a quick run and trip around the league. And we do have, starting on Saturday, an interesting matchup with a 12:30 game on ABC. Second week in a row, the Ducks are on ABC at 12:30. This time with Washington State coming into Austin. Oregon is a 20-point favorite and with an over and under of 61. What do we think?
I don't disagree with DJ, but go Cougs. It would be the funniest thing of all time. And as I said previously, I will be completely and totally insufferable, probably get banned on Twitter or X. Fuck you, Elon. But yeah, it'll be a problem if Wazoo wins this game for Duck fans on Twitter.
God, that would be so funny. It would.
I might make that devious duck kid Austin cry for real.
Please do, because I want to see it. I need it in my life.
Will the real Wazoo show up? Are you the team that was basically running away from Oregon State?
Yo, for real, where did that team go?
Or are you the team that, you know, got blown out, you know, by Arizona? Are you the team that beat Wisconsin? Are you the Cam Ward that was damn near a Heisman contender before Arizona? You know what I'm saying? So I think at the end of the day, you know, similarly to a lot of the good quarterbacks in the country, Cam Ward, you know, for lack of a better phrase, is a head case, you know, and it's not things that are like off the field and things like with Caleb, but it's more on the field. Like when when Cam's out of the game mentally, you can kind of see it. He just kind of chucks balls away and, you know, he's out of rhythm. He doesn't trust his receivers. He doesn't trust his offense. And I think, you know, the game kind of gets Cam up for the game. In Arizona, he probably wasn't up for it. They had a really close, tough loss last year, and I think he gets up for this. Got up for Oregon State. I think he gets up for this. I'll still go Oregon. Wazoo's got a tough front, but yeah, I'll go Oregon by 2 possessions, maybe 10.
Yep. 14. The problem, in my opinion, is that Washington State doesn't have any running game whatsoever. And
at all.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They got solid defense, but how long is your defense going to be on the field, you know?
Yep. I'd say I'll take the over on this one, but it would not shock me to see Oregon cover.
What's the points?
20.
Yeah. Got Wazoo almost had him last year. Yeah. Should have won that game.
But it's
needed a furious comeback from Oregon to get that last year.
But that's also in Pullman versus Ad Otson, and
it's true. For the record, that's also Dan Lanning's only win versus the Northwest football teams.
Congrats, Dan! You can beat the Cougs. Here's your medal. All
right, going to Mountain West too.
All right, let's move along to a 5 p.m. kick on Fox. And it is the Utah Utes, no rising, traveling to USC, who is a 7-point favorite with the over-under at 53. This one is interesting. Shouts to what actually was a better USC defensive performance, and yet you still lost by 28. So, as much as I hate to say it, the class of this conference this year is the University of Washington and the University of Oregon. I could really go either way on this one. If the good USC offense shows up, it could be a USC comfortable. If USC from the last 3 or 4 weeks shows up, it is...
Whew. I am not picking USC in a game for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Ooh. Even if the good USC offense shows up, Utah's defense at mid will probably still make it competitive.
Line play is...
Exactly. Nuts. Ellis is stupid. I want to know if Caleb's going to paint fuck Utah on his fingernails again. but no, give me Utah on this one.
He needs to put Caleb on his fingernails. That's what he needs to put.
Facts. No, yeah, for real. Give me Utah on this one. I'm gonna pick Utah by a touchdown.
Yep, I got it. Utah by a touchdown.
Yep.
I was gonna be with DJ. I'll take Utah by 3. They'll cover.
Mm-hmm.
By
a tutty. Yeah, I'll take Utah on the points as well. And again, I.
Give me another 3 picks.
Depression.
Completely eliminate Caleb from the Heisman race, please.
Depression.
Well, yeah, he's still got a hope and a prayer, but if he throws another 3 pick game, it's donezo.
Yep.
And Daniels.
What's
next game?
Next one is a 7:30 kick on ESPN with UCLA, who is a 17-point favorite going on the road to the farm. Over under at 53.5, and I'm not sure how you look at the defense that UCLA has and the offense outside of what Stanford did to Colorado and how you get to a game that gets over 50 points.
That's did you say 17-point favorite?
And UCLA is 17-point favorite.
All right. Okay.
I'm not sure how.
Yeah.
Maybe if they decide not to throw a pass. At all.
UCLA. Why do I feel like this game is going to be like 7-3?
Stanford can't stop the run. The reason why they were able to compete with Colorado is because Colorado spams the pass. So, like, they're going to get themselves out of the game. I think they're going to get ran to death. But 17 is just, UCLA going to score 17 points?
I mean, exactly. I think they're going to score 17 points, but not many more.
It was like
the under's free money.
Oh, that's probably like 17.
I still take it.
Hammer that.
Tugs knows this. I said that prior to tonight when that Kraken won 7-4 against a Stanley Cup contender, and I'm not sure how that happened, but like my question to our Kraken GC was that. Did the Kraken hire Brian Ferentz when we weren't looking because we couldn't score for shit?
That's crazy. Iowa always seems to like hurt the other quarterback and like make it a game.
But like, look at the defense. They're 6-1.
Mm-hmm. On accident.
They're going to win out.
Oh my goodness. It is. The team that wins the ugliest rock fights in the history of college football.
The ugliest rock fights.
That was funny. That shit was funny.
All right. Finally, I think we can move briefly into our game preview. UW is a 26.5-point favorite with the over-under at 59.5. Arizona State's got a decent defense. I will take the over. I think this could be a game where UW gets a 50 burger, or Arizona State might need to score 14.
I was wondering if he was going to bounce out.
Yeah, DJ had some technical difficulties. He did some.
He's tired of listening to my ass talk.
He just vanished. This was funny.
It was like shit.
That was funny. I got the dogs, man. I think it's going to resemble like Cal's game flow. We're going to get up. I do think that they're going to
score. We're calling a pick 6 right now? Is that what you're saying?
Hey, look, Trent Borgay, man. Every time he plays, he puts up 320 passing yards. So whether they win or lose, he going to chuck it. That is a gunslinger. So, and they got solid weapons. They got enough weapons to make plays. We have to tackle. Our corners did not tackle last week. So I don't know what the hell is going on with that. We had 20-plus tackles last week. But we rallied.
I mean, to be fair, Bucky's hella slippery. I mean, you said 20 missed tackles. He probably had 10 on 2 plays.
So Cam Scadaboo has a terrible offensive line. I think he's averaging under 4 yards a carry. But last year at, I think, Sac State, he averaged 7 yards a carry. And I think he had, like, the most broken tackles or yards after contact. If you just watch him play, he is probably the hardest, him and Bucky probably the hardest 2 people to bring down in this conference. It's just unfortunate that he plays for Arizona State right now. So we're going to, and he's a big kid. So he's going to be hard to bring down, and we're going to have to bring our pads. This is going to be a D-line, linebacker, Dom Hampton type of a game. Yep, for sure. Cam Fab also has been a secure tackler. He was the only person last week to tackle Bucky in the open field. So I think it's going to be the Cal game flow, where we may have 55 to 60, and they got 25 to 30.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Jake, yeah. Tug, score predictions?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same vein. I gave each team a little bit more. I'm going to go with the
58-24. Mm-hmm.
I'm
going to
go
55-20. I really wanted to assume that Arizona State was going to challenge us. This was going to be a trap game, but that us versus us stuff is a little different this year. Like, it has nothing to do with the opponent outside of what, a couple hours after the game. They weren't even talking about Oregon. They stopped trolling them. They posted their posts on Instagram, their photo shoots, and it was over. They was next game.
Yeah. And I mean, this is the last team to beat Washington.
Uh-huh.
So they don't know what a trap game is when this is the last team to beat them in over a calendar year. Last time we lost a game was October 8th, 2022. This isn't something that they're going to have a trap situation. I'm much more worried about a trap game situation the following week against Stanford on the farm than I am against a trap game, or than I am for a trap game here against Arizona State. Exactly.
Yep.
The library shout to UW.
I agree with that. On that note, I will also say, speaking of us versus us and the UW social media, shout out to Casey Byers, not only for the videos that he's done all year, but like what an insightful and transparent and amazing spaces to have that conversation and just be open to, like, it is just, I said it, I think it was one of the few things that I said in that spaces last night. Just that level of openness and transparency with the fan base and willingness to just, hey, what do you guys like? What are you like, we are just hitting on all cylinders right now. And on that note, here's my prediction. I'm going to go 63-21.
Ooh, let's go.
I didn't have the balls to do it.
They're pissed.
He's got to make up for the game against Arizona where he threw zero. So, I wouldn't be surprised.
Hey, this might be your poll game.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Name a DB. Name a DB. Shit.
They got
barbecue chicken all in that secondary.
No, I just, when it comes to this game, I think Darker Knight brought up a great point about the keeping the team motivated with like the jerseys and stuff. Like, I think that's a good idea for the coach to like keep the team motivated coming off of too much wine, coming off of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And on the subject of new gear, just for laughs, I'm going to put this out there to the universe. If anybody really likes our podcast and wants to send us some new gear or me some new gear, Home Field Apparel is dropping a UW bomber jacket tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock a.m. Pacific time. I guarantee none of us would say no. Holy shit, is that fire?
Dude, it's so sick.
But also, I will say, look up Hooligan7SEA on Redbubble. I'm also in Printify. I'll put this out with the episode. But any final thoughts on the Arizona State game this weekend?
It's a night game, LED lights. It's going to be a lituation.
Dude, the lights off the Chrome Dome is going to be so dope, dude. It's going to be so fucking pretty. Sick.
It's going to be pretty.
It's going to be in the club.
All right. Everybody, thanks for listening.
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
beat the devs.